Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
When I'm in my good habits, one thing I do is I take a piece of ginger, throw it on the table, and or on the cutting board, chop it up into about 7 or 8 pieces, and then I take and pound each individual piece to break it up a little bit, or sometimes crush it in my hands, and then drop it into some water, and then boil it with the water. Then I turn the heat on, and it boils and boils and boils, and then after it comes to a boil for a few minutes, then I stop, and then I steep it, and let it simmer. Basically, it simmers in there, and I let it simmer for a good 15 or 20 minutes. It's quite literally a brownish, yellowish brown color. It's dark and powerful. Powerful medicine is the ginger tea right from the root, and a very strong taste. I had a friend, and still do, he's right down the street, and maybe a guest on my show soon, and he's a practitioner of Chinese medicine, and he often says, if I'm not sure what's going on for myself, then I would just make some really strong ginger tea and work from there. Tonight on Green Magic, Green Medicine, with your host Susan Weed, we're going to be discussing roots, and of course ginger is a root, and when I'm in my good habits and in my good routines, that's part of my practice as well. But join us in our circle in just a few minutes. Green Magic, Green Medicine with Susan Weed. Everyone, and welcome to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Susan Weed. My name is Daniel Michael, and I'm the founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And I see Susan is in the queue, so I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Welcome, Susan.
Green blessings. How are you this evening?
Doing very well and extremely busy.
All right. Well, that's the way you like it, right?
Of course. I'm hyper, and I'm working only for myself right now as I've stepped out of the corporate cube and I'm no longer an employee.
Now you have a real ogre for a boss.
Yeah. Now I have to argue with myself and with customers, but that's okay.
Exactly.
Still prefer it that way than having all the middlemen to argue with, middlemen and women, I guess.
But exactly.
It's really nice.
Well, yeah, you know, in most of the United States now, people are really starting to notice that it's getting dark earlier. Are you noticing that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, we've come around that corner of the equinox. Remember we mentioned that, the fall equinox, when the day and the night were equal length. And then the dark starts gaining on us. And now, by the middle of October, coming up in 2 weeks at the beginning of winter, we're really starting to notice that it is dark earlier, and the days are so warm and bright, but wow, the nights are getting chilly. And we respond to that, you know, we respond to that by, like, grabbing for a long-sleeve shirt, right?
Absolutely.
We say, hey, you know, I'm going to wear a sweater. Oh, you know, it's a little chillier at night. I just, came back from a conference in North Carolina. Well, I took a heavy sweater with me because it could be cold there. In October it wasn't, but it sure could. And the plants do the same thing. The plants are doing, and we can see that, right? Some of the plants are saying, okay, goodbye, here it is. I have sung my song, and it is at an end, and now I scatter my seeds, and I am all gone. Those are the annual plants. And those annual plants live for a year or less. And annual comes from annus, which means a ring, and that's a ring around the sun. My favorite birthday card says, congratulations, you made it around the sun again. Because that's what a year is, isn't it? The whole planet has orbited around the sun once. That's an annual. Now, annuals only live for a short amount of time. They don't persist. So an annual is looking out to make lots of babies. Plant an annual seed. What it wants to do is grow straight up, have lots of flowers, and each one of those flowers have lots of seeds, and then die. There's some annuals that live for as long as 6 weeks. You know, that one's called quickweed. And in a really warm garden, you can go from one or two quickweed plants to nothing but quickweed in three generations, which is just 3 6-week periods. Many of our most important food plants are annuals because all they want to do is grow up tall and straight, have lots of babies, and then die. Wheat, corn, rice, rye, oats, beans. These are all annual plants, and they have lots and lots and lots of seeds, which are their babies, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Right, and we don't use wheat root or oat root or bean root. We generally don't use the roots of annuals because there isn't much to them. The roots of annuals serve the purpose of connecting the plant to the ground so it doesn't blow around. And, of course, helping it to, you know, move moisture and nutrients and so on. But it's not ever a storage area. So it's rare that the root of an annual is ever used. But annuals provide, as I said, lots and lots of food for us and lots of beauty. Most of the really famous flowering plants are annuals. And people talk about, oh, I have to plant my annuals for my color. All those wonderful things. And, of course, if we want lots and lots of color from our annuals, we have to, I say, you have to sexually frustrate them. In other words, you have to deadhead them in gardener's language, which means you let them make their flowers, but you don't ever let them make their babies. So they just keep making more and more and more and more flowers until finally it's too late and it's too cold. Now, annuals are vulnerable. If there's an earthquake or an eruption or a hurricane or, you know, some kind of natural disaster, and all of the annual is wiped out, that's it, it's gone. It's extinct now. Does it have any way to recoup? And annual seeds usually don't stay viable or able to produce new plants for a really long time. If we want to keep an annual going, we usually have to plant it every year. Right? The Spaniards did their best to wipe out quinoa and amaranth, knowing that they were annual crops and that they could prevent the people from growing them for a number of years in a row, those crops would become extinct. And as we all know, some of the people escaped to the mountains carrying those crops with them and continued to grow them on a yearly basis until it was safe to bring them back to civilization. I remember, you know, when I was working in health food stores in the 70s, and it was like, you know, the lost grains have been brought back again, a really big and important deal.
Fascinating, so, how it happens. It really is.
Isn't it, though? Yeah, and how we relate with that. So one way to get a little edge on this is to live for 2 years. Because if you live for 2 years and there's a disaster, then there's a chance that the part of you which was in the other form of the other stage can somehow survive it. Because you have two forms or stages, right? So in a biannual, a two-year plant, the seed sprouts and leaves grow above ground in a basal rosette. In other words, a flat on the ground with a strong center mandala of leaves. And down from that grows a taproot. And it is a taproot because it goes down like a tap, but it's also derived from top root because it looks a little like the child's toy atop, if you imagine it really elongated. In other words, it's bigger at the top, and it tapers down. If you're thinking carrot, bingo, a carrot is a biennial. That's a taproot. Or parsnip, yes. A parsnip is a biennial as well. Some of the most famous roots that are used are biennial roots like burdock root and parsley root. So we only harvest the roots of biennials at the end of their first year of growth or occasionally through the winter and into the early spring of the second year. So in the first year, it's made of basal rosette of leaves and this deep taproot that goes down. And then in the second year, all the food and the energy that is in this taproot comes up, and it's almost like the root turns itself inside out. Think of a burdock with burrs on it. Suddenly there's this big stalk above ground, like the root has come above ground, turned into a stalk, and turned into the flowers. And if you dig the burdock root, you'll see there's nothing left of it. It's all gone. It has all been turned into the flower stalk and the flowers. Similarly, if you grow carrots and you don't harvest them, they're going to turn into flowers and seeds. And you're not going to have any carrots. Because that root is a storage root. And that's, of course, why we're after it, right? We say, hey, carrots, that is sweet. Parsnips, parsnips, yum, yum, yum. And many gardeners know that their carrots and their parsnips are going to taste best after frost. And so you leave your carrots and your parsnips in the ground as long as you can. You're kind of playing with it, right? Ooh, we don't want the ground to be solid because then we can't dig them up, but we want it to get really cold because the colder it gets, the sweeter it gets because the more carbohydrate that root is going to store. Remember, we started out talking about the nights getting longer and colder and how we're responding to that. And how the plants are responding to that, too. And that's one of the things that they're doing, is they're, the biennial plants are producing carbohydrate in their first year roots to store over the winter and to be ready for a super shoo next year. And so we see these two very different forms, right? We look at mullein. And most people first come to notice mullein in its second year when it's got this big towering tall, they can be 8-10 feet tall flower stalks just covered with these yellow flowers and then this big thick seed head on there. People dip it in wax and burn it as a torch for Halloween and don't even recognize the first year plant, which is, you're right, a basal rosette of leaves with a taproot. So the mulleins that were second-year mulleins this year are now dried seed stalks, which we can use in our Halloween fun. And the first-year mulleins, which we can find right now, are beautiful, round, with a strong center, all right, leaves, very fuzzy leaves. And if you dig that up, it's got a deep taproot down under there. Mullein root is a sedative. And I learned this from a woman who used it in a real emergency situation when she was living with her young son in the Adirondacks, miles and miles and miles from anybody, and there was like 8 or 10 feet of snow on the ground, and her son started having seizures.
Wow.
And she decided to go outside and pray. And while she was praying, she saw the top of the mullein sticking up through the snow. And she took it as a sign, and she went inside and started boiling water and pouring it where she saw the mullein until she had melted the snow down, gotten down to the earth, dug up the mullein root because the rest of it was dead. And she says there wasn't much of a root. As I said, that root turns itself inside out. But what there was, she took in the house, she boiled up, she gave to her son, and it stopped his seizures. And she's not saying that she would even, you know, say that that was like the way to use it. It was just like, this is what the earth was going to give her right then that she could lay her hands on and use and help her son. And she just felt so blessed, you know, that the mullein could show itself and could, like, you know, wiggle its nose and go, hey, over here, me, me. I one day was harvesting mullein leaves, and the books all say to harvest the mullein leaves at the end of the first year of growth when they're in that basal rosette, and they can be quite big at that time. Some of the leaves in the basal rosette can be 12, 18, even 20 inches in length, depending on where the mullein is growing. And so they're a little hard to dry because they're big and long and floppy and hairy and fuzzy as all get out. And, you know, it's you can't just, like, lay them over wine to dry because they're a little too stiff for that. So books say, well, clothespin them on a line. Can you imagine, you know, like if you've harvested 100 mullein leaves, clothespinning them up, it's just too tedious. And then another book said, we'll string them up. And that was great, except they all, you know, instead of being in a taut string, they just made a parabola and all, like, hung down in a big mess. I'm like, you know, this is just really a drag. And I was actually complaining to myself while I was harvesting the mullein. And so the mullein said to me, well, you have nothing to complain about and no one to blame but yourself. I'm like, yeah, well, that's usually the truth, isn't it? It's usually, you know, what I have to complain about is myself and who I have to blame is myself. So exactly, right. Could you please explain to me what I'm doing that is making me so crazy about harvesting your leaves? She said, well, you're harvesting them now. Why don't you just wait until I flower? And she showed me an image of herself flowering and how those leaves, right, how that root turns itself inside out and pushes up, 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 pulling the leaves up with it so that the leaves are now kind of arrayed, you know, around that stalk. And she, you know, showed me in my mind cutting that stalk, hanging the whole thing upside down, and wow, how easy. Now I didn't have to clip the leaves to anything. They just hung, you know, from the sides of the stalk and dried beautifully. And then when I started using that, I realized, oh my goodness, that sedative action that this woman had told me about all those decades ago, of course, when the root turns inside out, comes up into the stalk, and now that I was using the stalk, my mullein remedies, which usually the upper part of the mullein is used to help people with asthma, with allergies, with lung congestions, a real lung healing herb, and many of these conditions really benefit from a slight sedative effect overall to the nervous system and to the lungs as well. So we can get the good of the biennial root from the stalk and the seeds of the plant too. And when you hear herbalists talking about root, be aware that many times the seeds can be used in, if not exactly the same way, an extremely similar way. Okay. And then, of course, there are perennials, right? Pear annuals, meaning in our minds forever. And so we have the annuals that live briefly, we have the biennials that live for 2 years, and then we have the perennials, which we think of as living forever. I often ask my class to tell me how long a perennial lives, and there's always somebody who says forever. Now, we all know that nothing lives forever. And the truth of the matter is it's a 1, 2, 3. Annuals live 1 year or less. Biennials live 2 years or less, but always more than 1 year. And perennials live 3 years or less, but always more than 2 years. And some people are very disappointed when they buy at a nursery a perennial plant and it dies in the third year.
Mm.
But that's perennial. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to live forever.
Not
However,
forever.
There are, of course, long-lived perennials. Trees are long-lived perennials. And some trees can live for a very long time. So whereas the annual has to grow straight up, flower, make many, many seeds, because it's goodbye and it must leave many children behind, the biennial doesn't have to make so many children because it's doing this alternating year thing and it has that protection, although they usually do. Biennials usually are fairly good at making lots of seeds. It's the perennials, the ones that can live for long times, that really slow it down. We could compare ourselves to perennials, right? We would find it quite outrageous if a human being gave birth to 1,000 other human beings when they were 6 months old.
But I lived down south, and I did know, you know, in the trailer park.
Younger and more. So more annual than perennial there.
That's right.
The perennial is like a walnut is a perennial tree, and from planting a walnut to harvesting a walnut can be 25 to 30 years.
Hmm.
So perennials can do it slowly. They don't have to reproduce right away. And what they do, since they're not using that energy to make seeds, and I've already made this connection for you between the seeds and the roots, is they put it in the root. So it's the perennial roots that we really think of as the big medicines, the roots that are persistent, the roots that have a real reason to protect themselves. The biennial roots can afford to be really sweet because there's a lot of them. And if somebody comes along and starts chowing down on them, well, they kind of have safety in numbers. But the perennials, often there are not that many of them. And so it behooves them to put poisons in their roots. Now, of course, we look at those poisons and we go, oh, yeah, medicine, we like that. And again, that's why we think of these plants as being such powerful medicines, because they do have these very strong constituents in them. Now, everything that is underground is not a root. And that is usually a bit of surprise to people, because they tend to think, well, you know, if it's growing underground, that must mean that it's a root. I'm looking at one of my favorite books, Roots, An Underground Botany to the Useful Wild Roots, Tubers, Corns, and Rhizomes of North America by Doug Elliott. Okay, so, true roots and not true roots. Wow. The rhizome is a horizontal creeping stem. It produces roots from its nodes. Ginger is a rhizome. It is not a root.
Oh, my gosh. So I messed up the introduction.
You didn't mess it up at all. I think it's perfect because most people call it ginger root.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, I'm so glad that he talked about ginger root, because this really leads right into discussing these, you know, okay, maybe they're a little bit arcane, botanical, herbal things, but I don't know. To me, they're kind of fascinating, you know, that a root comes from the seed. You think of like a seed that you plant, right? And we kind of think from one end comes the root and from the other end comes the shoot, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the root. And then what Doug is saying is, yes, the ginger makes roots, and then part of the stalk enlarges underground, and that's the rhizome. And that's what we eat. And if you were to see it growing, you would see the roots growing out of the rhizome.
Hmm. So lots of chances to grow, including myself.
Oh, yes, indeed. And then there are tubers.
Yes.
Right? You know, tubers are the swollen tips of stems. So they're actually related to rhizomes. Rhizomes and tumors are kind of the same thing. They're like a stem, and it gets like swollen up, and the roots come from it, but it itself isn't a root. Right? A bulb is actually leaves. So we think of an onion, and many people think of an onion as a root, but really an onion is a bulb, just like a tulip bulb.
Yeah.
And, right? And the roots come from the base of it. And then if you keep your onions around too long, the stalk comes up out of it, doesn't it? Like it starts to sprout.
Now, in the classifications, what would be the difference between something else in the ground like a potato?
A potato is a tuber.
Okay. Yeah, because things grow from it. You can put it like in water in a glass and you'll see these little stems kind of start sprawling
out. Exactly. Yes. That's very characteristic of tubers because they're the swollen tips of stems. And so they get that green growth coming out from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to me, it's really interesting. And it turns out to be fairly important when we want to use these plants medicinally as well. Because we would want to treat a bulb, which is a thickened leaf base, in a different way than we would treat a root. You know, we could dig up a root, and it would generally dry and get pretty hard, whereas a bulb, if we dig it up and just leave it out, is actually not going to dry and get hard. It's going to mush up because it's leaves. It's not the dense, doesn't have the dense cell walls of the root. And then the rhizomes and the tubers are a little bit in between. You can freeze-dry potatoes. That's what they do in Peru, right? They harvest the potatoes and leave them out and just let them freeze-dry. So they do get dry and kind of hard. And you can do the same thing with, like, sunchokes and other things. But the roots themselves, right, even if they're thick, like a taproot, have a different cellular structure. And in the weeks to follow, as we talk about specific roots, we're going to return again and again to the things that we learned this week. But once again,
we're running out of time.
We have used up all of our time.
Yes. But I really appreciate you joining us. And I learned two things tonight, definitely, that ginger wasn't a root. And I thought I was all fancy with my ginger thing. And that... the potato is also in a different category, which I thought it was, but now you've clarified it. But so I definitely learned some things myself this evening, which I always do when I have you on Main Street Universe or here at Green Magic, Green Medicine. Thank you very much for joining us.
Green blessings, everybody. Come and visit me at SusanWeed.com and look for my books at the Wise Woman Bookshop. Remember, herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine right outside your door. Hey, let's hear it from Main Street. Hooray.
That's good right, night. Absolutely. And our three-year anniversary is coming up the night before Halloween, October 30th.
Okay. Talk to you a couple of days before then.
Say
bye
again.
Bye.
All right. Have a good evening. Have a great evening. Thank you very
too.
Much.
Good night.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.